Welcome to the Grace Hour Show, a Christian program that takes a dive into our daily challenges and helps us learn our faith in a practical way. I'm Pastor Paul Andrelonis. I'm joined in the studio by Philippe Siragi.
And I am joined by my new Grace Hour Show mug. Look at that.
It's
both sides. You failed. You brought a fake one. I think it's going to ruin the whole hour, I think.
Yeah, okay. My coffee's not going to taste as good.
No,
as
my coffee tastes either. Great. Except the thing, we like to thank the producers to getting the mic, except I had to fill it with coffee myself.
You did, yeah.
So that's a downside.
Yeah.
I'm just saying. I got the mug, but I had to provide the coffee myself.
You had to bring your own
coffee. Somebody could wise up, you know, and just get... I'm just saying.
Well, I mean, hopefully we don't. The show doesn't, you know...
It might be ruined.
Because of your
I mean, the whole show today might be ruined.
No.
Because I got the wrong coffee. It's hazelnut flavor. I don't like hazelnut flavor.
You picked the coffee.
I know, I got the wrong pod.
Keurig pods. Yeah. I'll get you.
Yeah, I know, you know.
I'll get you.
So I don't know. You want to finish alone? Maybe I don't even have the capacity.
You don't have the, yeah. If Philippe just passes out halfway through this episode.
You know, it's because of the coffee.
I'm just going to carry us the rest of the way to the finish line. Yes. But
anyway.
Anyways, we're excited this week.
It's a nice
mug. Staying in the book of Isaiah. And Pastor Roger and Liz, they spoke yesterday about Isaiah 6.
Yes.
And we'll be talking this whole week about Isaiah and you know, finding Christ in Isaiah. Yes. And we're going to be talking about Isaiah chapter 7.
Logical.
Right after Isaiah 6, we're going to Isaiah 7. And maybe before we kind of get into, we have a particular verse that we're going to be getting to, Isaiah 7, verse 14. But before we get there, I think it's important for us to kind of talk about, you know, the context of Isaiah chapter 7, what is going on, who Isaiah is talking to, who Isaiah, like, what are the circumstances of the situation, maybe kind of just surface level or to start the conversation. We have a king. King Ahaz has taken over as a king, and there is the divided kingdom at this point. Mm-hmm. We have Israel and Judah, northern kingdom Israel, and lower kingdom Judah, and Israel and Syria have formed an alliance or have come together, and they are coming against the nation of Judah, the lower kingdom of Judah. King Ahaz is the king of Judah, and he has this decision to make. And we see this in 2 Kings chapter 16. This is all kind of, it's all documented and all shown there, and also in the Chronicles, I'm sure, where it talks about King Ahaz and this decision that he comes to. And this is what God is speaking to, the decision-making of Ahaz in the midst of this circumstance, in the midst of this opposition that he has coming from Syria and Israel. They're coming against him, and we see in the first few verses, the first 9 verses of Isaiah chapter 7, there's this interaction where Isaiah is sent by God to speak to King Ahaz and to give him some instruction in how he should handle this interaction. We see in those first few verses, Ahaz, the son of Jotham, son of Uzziah, king of Judah, and then it talks about Rezin, the king of Syria, and Pekah, the son of Remaliah, the king of Israel, came up to Jerusalem to wage war against it, but could not yet mount the attack against it. So we have this attack that's coming against Ahaz, and he's got this decision to make. How am I going to withstand? And he decides, and God kind of warns him in that, the response from God, or the instruction from God that he gives to Isaiah to give to Ahaz are, you know, I can help, I can be your, you know, I can help you in this. You don't need to use your own means. You don't need to use, you know, find outside help. I can be your help. And we see that in verse 3 of Isaiah chapter 7. The Lord said to Isaiah, go to meet Ahaz, you and your son, Shear Jashub, your son, at the end of the conduit of the upper pool on the highway to the washer's field, and say to him, God says to Isaiah, tell Ahaz, be careful, be quiet, do not fear, and do not let your heart be faint because of these two smoldering stumps of firebrands at the fierce anger of Rezin and Syria, the kings of Syria and the king of Israel. They have devised evil against you, saying, let us go up against Judah and terrify it, and let us conquer it for ourselves and set up the son of Tabeel. And it talks about that. And God is saying, be careful, be quiet, do not fear, don't let your heart faint. And later on, it says, it talks about those nations saying, they shall not stand, it shall not come to pass that they come against you. Yeah. And the one verse, verse 9, the second part of it, this last phrase that God says in this first instance is, if you are not firm, you will faith. You will not be firm at all.
Yeah.
And it's this
strong verse.
Yeah, it's a strong verse. So God is telling him through the prophet Isaiah, listen, I am your covering, I am leading you, I am guiding you. If you have faith in me, you know, I will do what is best in this situation. Yeah. I will cover you, I will lead you. There will be a remnant. Actually, Isaiah's son, Shear Jashub, his name means a remnant shall return. That there is a remnant. This is not going to be the end of Judah. I have, this is my nation. This is mm-hmm. this is important people to me. And God is telling him, you know, trust in me, mm-hmm. and I will lead you and I will guide you. And then if we read in 2 Kings, you can see all the he doesn't trust in God.
No, he doesn't.
He decides to align himself with the Assyrians, then he becomes kind of indebted to them as a result of it. He changes, you know, takes down the altar. He makes a new altar. He takes down the temple item that Solomon had built and all these things. And it's kind of like this out of control, you know, snowball rolling downhill mm-hmm, that mm-hmm. Ahaz has brought upon himself after God gave him this instruction. So maybe in that kind of overview, what are your comments or what do you
well, you think? Yeah, thanks. I think the context helps a lot because, okay, so our theme today is Isaiah 7 is the ushering of the promise of Emmanuel, right? So, which is a promise of, and we see chapter 9, the son is given. So there's this whole, this week is, we're getting closer and closer to Easter, right? So
yes.
we are looking at these promises that were foretold about Christ and, mm-hmm. and our theme today is Emmanuel, which means God is with us. Mm-hmm. So, because when you first read Isaiah 7, you wonder what's the connection between that battle it's about to happen and the promise.
Yes.
And the promise is a promise of faith.
Yes.
Do I believe that God is with me? Right? So there's a promise being given. But I think before we look at that, let's look at the bigger picture of the kings in Old Testament mm-hmm. as they relate to trusting God, you know, mm-hmm. For their battles. And I think it's a good image for us. I read something I need to find. Maybe I'll flip through my phone if I find it today. It was interesting because the whole idea of trusting God is maybe our number one challenge in life, right?
Yeah.
So we can look back. It's funny how sometimes we look back at the Bible and say, well, this king was bad. You know, like Ahaz, was mm-hmm. he didn't trust God. Mm-hmm. What a loser.
Yeah.
You know, the disciples, they live 3 years with Jesus. No one does the cross but one. Mm-hmm. And it's easy for us to look at the narrative of the Bible, the story of the Bible, and look at this. We would do better. Like we would. Mm-hmm. We wouldn't.
Yeah.
Our challenge, your challenge, our challenge for all of us listening today is, do I trust God today or not? That's the big one. Pastor Schaller, the pastor of our church, did a devotional this morning on the book of Job. And really the idea is, that can God be God? You know, can we just accept that God be God, you know? And so a few things I could say about that, but I think I find interesting for me as a reminder. Number one, if you look at Deuteronomy 17, you have all the lists of things that when the king will come, because God knew they would want a king at some point, mm-hmm. these are the things that he could do and things that he couldn't do. So you can see the Saul and Solomon, they messed up the whole thing, of course, but David as well. And one of the things that you couldn't do is count your chariots, mm-hmm. count your valid men.
Yeah.
And in 1 Samuel 24, when David did the numbering of his people, mm-hmm. he got a backlash from, you know, God asking the questions, you know,
why
did you do it? And then he has to choose between, you know, consequences. Mm-hmm. And you might wonder, why was God so adamant about not allowing David mm-hmm. to number his men? Mm-hmm. I would want to know, if I go to battle, I would like to count how many guys I have. Yeah. But those metrics that we use as human beings are not based on faith. So, of course, we're wise. We need to be careful. I'm not buying something I can't afford. I'm not trying to be hyper-spiritual.
Yes.
But on the other hand, if I use natural metrics for things, that shows that I don't trust God. And that's exactly the position that Ahaz is finding himself in. As I'm looking at things, I hear from God, I'm going to go with the Assyrians anyway. Mm-hmm. And that's the point, really, of the God is with us. How much of this what does it mean to you and I today? What does it mean to them at the time? And I think we forget that God with us is the key of living a life of faith today. And that's why I like the verse you quoted at the end. If you're not firm in faith, you won't be firm at all. I mean, because if I believe, like, and again, we go back to, you know, like church service, last church service in our church, where Pastor Shallow was saying, anyway, if I live a natural life, I have a very small world.
Yeah.
But then my understanding and my submission to the word of God enhances my world, not to make it bigger, but to see what it is really, which is bigger than my own life.
Yeah.
And I think in that way, the only way that we have to please God in Hebrews 11:6 is by living by faith. That's the only one, because that's the only way we can see the big picture.
Yeah.
So I think the story of what we see in Ahaz and also the promise of God with us, which we'll talk about the incarnation later on, it's exactly, it's one of the major points of our faith as a Christian. I can trust God today because he's with me, right? And so, yes.
Yeah, trusting God and the faith. In 1 John 5, it talks about the victory that we have, and maybe like applying it to this specific story here in Isaiah or in 2 Kings, like God is telling him, there is victory in me. And then Ahaz, in response to this statement, and I just reading it here, he says, I will not ask and I will not put the Lord to the test.
Yes.
It's like, I don't want to have faith. Basically is what he's saying. Like he's saying your faith is infirm in verse 9. If you're not firm in faith, you will not be firm at all. And he says, well, I don't want to be firm. I'm not going to ask and I'm not going to put the Lord to the test. I'm not going to test. I'm going to trust in what I know to be true. I'm in this situation. I know, okay, Assyrians help me. I won't be destroyed. Even if God is saying I won't be destroyed, he's, you know, they're not wanting to test that faith. And I think we can be that way too, you know, in our lives. And when we're trying to make decisions, we're trying to do things in those measurables, like you're saying, like, okay, what are the options in this situation? And the Bible does say things about, you know, if a man builds a house, he counts the cost and those types. But is God incorporated into my calculations for my life?
Yes.
Like, okay, yes, this is going to cost this much money or this much time or this many volunteers or this many people, all these different variables that go into that equation. But is God part of that? And am I viewing it, like you said, in the realm of how big God is in comparison to how little my measurements and my determinations, my ability to add and subtract and incorporate all those things into what I want to do? You know, am I willing to put God to the test?
Yes.
God is saying, I am faithful. And am I willing to believe in that? And is God with me, right? It's not only like I am faithful and I'm telling you that and I'm sitting over here not involved, not part of what, you know, a deistic view of you know, the world where God sets it in motion, and how am I supposed to connect with him or have a relationship with him in that way? But like God is saying, I am going to be faithful and you are victorious in me. And not only are you that way because I said so, but you're victorious and can experience my faithfulness because I am here.
Yes.
And I am present and I am with you. And I think that that's something that this is such a like overt, you know, just kind of ignoring of what God has said. Yeah. I don't want to test it. I don't want to put the Lord to the test. Right, and then that's when we have this response from Isaiah about, "Hear then, O house of David, is it too little for you to weary men that you weary my God also?" Yeah. And that's an interesting phrase there.
Yes.
Or just like, okay, am I putting God in the same category as me? Therefore, the Lord Himself will give you a sign: behold, the virgin shall conceive and bear a son, and shall call his name Emmanuel. And that's kind of where we are. Like the main theme of what we're talking about is giving us a sign. And at this point, this is the prophesying of Christ coming, which is talked about. The same exact wording is used in Matthew chapter 1, and that he will come and he will be a sign and he will demonstrate God's faithfulness, demonstrate God's involvement in our lives by coming and becoming a man and the incarnation happening there in the Gospels where we read it.
Yeah, I mean, I think it takes us to Proverbs 3, 5, and 6. You know, like, it's the idea is because Ahaz's response is almost like he's, you know, we have this expression in French. I'm going to try to translate it. I think it basically says, one, here you go, take it, is better than two, I will give you later. And the point is, what you have now, you can hold on to it because the promise of getting more may never happen.
Okay.
Right? Yeah. So it's almost the same. His response is almost like, no, thank you. That would be that. You know, I got the Assyrians or I got God later on, but I have to drop the Assyrians first. Mm-hmm. I'm not taking the risk. And that's exactly how I find myself. It's easy to look at him and say, well, you know, it's like, if I look at my big decisions and I'm thinking one particularly in my mind, I'm thinking, well, on this particular occasion, which I remember it was last October, I had to make a decision for something. Did I say no thank you to God? I may have. And I'm just wondering, you know, even today, I'm just wondering. I'm not like, it's not introspection or guilt or anything. I'm just saying, if God would just show me that I said to him no thank you, would I be able to drop it? Right? Yeah. Sort of scene or something. It's just like you have a crossroad and one, it's like, okay, I'm going to use my means over here. I'm going to trust God in this one.
Yeah.
And that's the question here. And I think in here it says, trust in the Lord, verse 5, with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways acknowledge him and he shall direct your path. And it's the ever unending choice that we have to make in our lives is trusting God.
Yeah.
I get up in the morning. His mercies are new every morning. But do I believe that?
Mm-hmm.
Do I, you know, like I have other decisions. And also it's like it's also a learning curve for us all the time because, well, maybe, for example, I'm thinking, did I learn how to trust God for my finances? Yes. Now, did I learn how to trust God in general? No, because when my health comes to an issue, then I have to trust God all over again.
Yeah.
Because, yes, he can provide for me. Can he heal me? Can he, you know, so it's like it's the same thing all over and all over again. And the answer, which is completely, I mean, when I read chapter 7 of these, I'm wondering, what's the connection between for Ahaz, the promise of a virgin shall conceive and his son will be called Emmanuel, how does that change my life today?
Yes, yeah.
Okay, you're telling me I'm about to be wiped out of the face of the earth by my enemies, and you're telling me, don't worry, we're gonna have a virgin will have a child, his name will be Emmanuel.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's when we need to remember, okay, hold on for a second, what does it mean? Oh, God is with us.
Yeah.
Like that's the idea. And I think it's the whole idea of you know, where is God? Does God care?
Mm-hmm.
Does God love me? Is God interested in my life? You know, and does God have a plan? And that's what I want to read. I read this morning, like some guy I'm following on Instagram. He's a Christian lawyer and he has got some great insights. I read it sometimes. His name is E.J. Gaines. I think he's the Christian music industry, but this is what he says. He says, if God has a plan for me, I want it all, right? It's because it's connected with the idea of, do I trust God at all? But he said, I hesitate to even say that because I'm afraid he'll suddenly send a swarm of struggles my way. You know, like I'm trusting you, you know, like odd that I don't anticipate a sudden shower of blessings. And he goes on by saying, it reveals my latent distrust of him or at least of his ways. At the very least, it's rather superstitious of me. Like, I'm not going to tell God, I'm trusting you, whatever you have for me, give it to me. Because what he's implying is, my faith in God, if I give him the permission, he's going to lay it on me, I'm going to be in trouble.
Yeah.
Why wouldn't he shower his blessings? And that's what he's explaining. My fear is that if I utter aloud, I want whatever you have for me, God is just hitching to cue the very worst of his trials, sadistically launching some attack on me to see if I really mean what I said. And I think I say this to my own soul first, this is not my father. And I love that. And then he goes on to say, I'm the fish, but he says, God isn't sitting on high, concocting a special mix of hardship and pain for those of us who aren't careful or precise with our words. Like, if I'm not asking for a blessing, he's going to kick my butt. That's the point. You know, like, I should be careful. I'm not asking, send whatever you want, because he's itching to send me trials. And his goal isn't gotcha. And I like that. He says, no, since before creation, God has had incredible plans for us, plans to prosper us, plans to give us hope in the future, plans for an eternity with him and real help for the here and now. So, I mean, he goes on to say other things, but I like this idea. How many times do I hesitate like Ahaz, okay, bring it on. Because I'm thinking when I say to God, bring it on, I better brace for impact.
Yeah.
But shouldn't be also expecting blessings?
Yeah.
So I think it shows a lot of our state of mind and how much we believe God is a good God or not. Because every time I say, okay, I'm giving all to God, he's going to take everything. Every time I'm saying, bring it on, I need to get ready for a shower of trials. But could it be that God has, you know, could it be possible for me to trust in the Lord, not lean on my own understanding? And the answer is yes, God is with us, Emmanuel. I think that's amazing. When I read that this morning, I just connected with our theme and thinking that's beautiful to realize faith in God is expecting whatever he wants. It does not mean it's going to be a trial all the time, you know.
Yeah, we can kind of like superimpose our own idea of what we think. Like,
yes.
Exactly. Like the okay, God, bring it on. And I assume, like you said, it's going to be a trial. I assume it's, and that's, I mean, the trial of our faith. We see that in the heroes of faith in all of the, you know, it's talking about the victories. And then it talks about people being sawn in half and being crucified and all these things. So that is an aspect of that, but that is not like the result of me saying, I trust you and I have faith in you is not what we should be focusing on when we say that we are trusting and having faith. Mm-hmm. You know, like you're saying, either way, because I say, oh, I'm going to have faith in God because he's going to bless me.
Yes.
Is also missing the point of it just as much as saying, I'm going to have faith in God and there's going to be amazing opposition and trials and negativity or circumstances that are going to come against me. But in both of those extremes, they're missing the point of it, which is the person that we're putting our trust in, and that person is someone that is with us, you know, like we were saying, Emmanuel, God with us, that this is, he has come from on high, he has come from his glory, and he has made himself of no reputation so that we could know him, so that we could have a relationship with him, so that we could recognize him in our lives, in our situations, in those things, so that the circumstances maybe aren't the focus of what my faith, you know, I am looking to God to see what he is going to do in my circumstances, you know, but that's not the main focus of them. Because if I'm focusing on, okay, is this going to be a positive or negative response from God?
Yes.
When I'm trusting him by faith versus I'm trusting him, and maybe there is no like categorization of those things because I'm focusing on him alone, as opposed to measuring, okay, I trusted God by faith and my enemies are still here and they haven't been taken out of my way and I haven't received the blessing from him. And, but I did go through this and this and this. And now I'm like focusing on those aspects of this walk of faith of my life, as opposed to focusing on the person that I'm putting my faith and my trust in. And I think that's part of this, you know, making God go from theoretical or from just informational in my mind. And maybe like in this Old Testament time, they're looking, you know, this is a prophecy for something coming in the future, something that is going to happen. And for us, we're looking back at something that has happened in the past.
Yes.
But in both instances, there's faith involved because it's something, yes, we have maybe a benefit in. But even still, there's that question that comes up in our culture, like, okay, is this even true? Did these things even happen? Are they real? All those things versus looking forward, you know, in the Old Testament prophecy where they're saying, will that even come to pass? And looking for the result or what has happened in our case and seeing, okay, but it's about saying, okay, is this real? Is this something true? And measuring the positives and the negatives as opposed to looking at the person that it's involving, the person that is Christ and that, you know, is God with us in the fullest extent, the fullest expression of that by being 100% God and 100% man and coming to earth so that we could know him and so that we could have that faith in a person, not in the results of that, of what that person can give me or what I can give myself in this case with Ahaz and his response to that.
I mean, what you just said, I think it's very important to think about, because I think the problem with Ahaz and the problem with us is we evaluate God's offer.
Yeah.
You know, and it's almost like it's like an HR interview, you know, is God fit for the position, you know, and I think it sounds like weird to say this, but I think it's because God speaks to him, you know, moreover, the Lord spoke to again to Ahaz saying, and ask for a sign, or, you know, and then for yourself. So, yeah, okay, well, let's make a deal. Like, it's almost like God is saying, okay, I see you're struggling. Okay, let's go on your terms.
Yes.
You know? Yeah. So God is like humbling himself to Ahaz, almost saying, I get it. You know, you're afraid. I get that. So ask me something. I'll do it for you. And no, thank you.
I'm not going to test you. Yeah.
So I'm not going to do that. Yeah. You know, so almost, and then we can rationalize, well, the Bible says I shouldn't tempt God, so I'm not going to tempt God. Mm-hmm. That's not the point. God is asking, you know, but is asking you to do it. And I think it's the same for me, like, because we could say, well, you know, it's worse for Ahaz because God spoke to him. I'm thinking, like, duh, God spoke to me.
Yeah.
You know, so that's the point. So it's not like I'm not, if I rationalize, you know, he had no reason to not trust God because God spoke to him. I have no reason not to trust God. Mm-hmm. Romans 15:4, everything has been written for my instruction.
Yeah.
So when I look at the Bible, do I trust God? Like when it says, I love you with an internal love in Jeremiah 31, do I believe that? You know, yeah. His mercies are new every morning. Do I believe that? Mm-hmm. God is with you. Mm. And of course, like if you tell me, well, don't worry about it. You know, like it's the same, you know, the return of Christ. I believe it. It's in the Bible, but I haven't seen it. So I'm living my life sometimes in mistrust. But for us, the promise of God is with us is real. Mm. He's been with us. You know, Jesus came on the earth. He died on the cross, and when he left, you know, his disciples were afraid. He said, well, don't worry, I'll send you the Comforter. So we haven't been left alone since.
Yeah,
you know, like the name Emmanuel, like means a lot to us in that way. It's a promise that God hasn't broken. You know, in centuries, God is still with us today. You know, I'm indwelt by the Holy Spirit. You're indwelt by the Holy Spirit, and that's a promise that He's made us. So yeah. I think it's amazing when you think about this way, you know.
Yeah, that is an important thing for us to, you know, God is with us and God is, you know, continues to be with us. Jesus had to leave so that the Comforter, the Holy Spirit could come. And I was thinking of like in this, you know, we're talking about a king, we're talking about Ahaz, this guy who God spoke to, you know, as you were saying, like, okay, yeah, God spoke to him, but God hasn't spoken to me. Okay, yeah, he gave us his word. But also like we talked about disqualification last week and talking into the mental health sphere, but in this same way, we could disqualify ourselves in God speaking to us. Mm-hmm. You know, like I'm not a king.
Yeah.
I'm not like ruling over a nation. I'm not a pastor, or I'm not like, we can make ourselves seem like we're not valuable in this conversation. Mm-hmm. Like God, why would God speak to me? We could say. But the reality is he has. And the reality is, it's not like he has spoken to us and given us his word. And those things are not just for, you know, one moment in my life, but they're for eternity. They're forever. Like they are things that I can go to and I can respond to and I can listen for and I can learn from continually as I'm living my life so that I can really get to know him and love him. You know, it's not like he only speaks to, you know, specific important, influential people in history, and that those are the only people we're speaking to. Because sometimes when we are like reading the Bible, I think we can be that way. Mm-hmm. We're like, oh, well, I wish I was like Moses and I could like talk to God, you know, have a conversation. And like, okay, we have like a prayer life where we can, the veil has been torn. We have access into the Holy of Holies to come boldly to his throne of grace. And we use that as an excuse not to, that, well, Moses had, you know, he could just go and talk to God whenever he wanted to. And we say, I can't do that. But the reality is we can. God is with us. God is here. We have this relationship. And I think that that's something that we can need to be reminded of, in that God is waiting for us to ask, seek, and knock and come to him and learn of him and grow in him. And it's not just something that we have to have a status or be qualified to do, but we can come. And actually the humility is the lowest point, is when we are more likely to do it, I think.
Yes.
But we had some questions that came through.
Yeah.
You know, trusting in God's provisions. From Joey Pallotta, old classmate of mine, I want to ask, what's the mindset of faith without works being dead? Work things in life out in my flesh and waiting on God's plan. Also, is a true thought to say that my work in God's plan for me to only say yes to his will is my work. So, I mean, in application of what we're talking about, God has, you know, told Ahaz, to trust in him, and he's decided to go against what God has. So like in that application for our mindset, as God is saying things to us and we're responding in our, you talked about making a decision or making a determination and trusting God, not leaning on our own understanding. How does that play into, our free will, I guess, and then also as it relates to God's, all-encompassing his sovereignty and his will?
Well, I think there's a couple of things we can say to Joe about this. Number one is, I think he's referring to the whole book of James, where, in a way, like, show me your works and I'll tell you what kind of faith you have. And I think the point that James is making is that, well, real faith produces real fruits.
Yeah.
And we agree with that completely. And the point is exactly what Paul says in Ephesians 2, 8, 9, and 10. You know, it's not by works that we save, although, so nobody should boast, but at the end he says, so we can enter into the works that he's prepared for us. So the consequence of living by faith comes with fruits that are that you can see, and things we do that we didn't do before. And it's connected to his second question about God's will. Yes, I think in a way my goal in life as a Christian is to do God's will. And it sounds like almost where is my will? But maybe my will is to decide to do his will, and that's my free will. And people find it something like a little hard to do. Well, you know, if there's something I would like to do, I'm thinking, well, we do that all the time. You're married, you have children, I'm married. What do we know? Do you do everything you want all the time? You don't.
No.
You have to, you know, it's like one example that I give all the time. So my wife, I think she heard it about 100 times, but I think before I met my wife, I was a biker. Like, I was riding motorcycles. My wife is afraid of motorcycles. So guess what? You know, she's afraid that I would kill myself on the road, so I don't ride motorcycles. Well, you're free to do whatever you want. I am. If I go tomorrow and buy the motorcycles, I can.
Yeah.
But to what consequences?
Sure, yeah.
You know, and so the point is, I'm doing this for her already because my love for her is bigger than my love for motorcycles. So I do sometimes ride motorcycles when I go back to France and my hometown. My sisters have motorcycles. We go for a ride together. And that's fun because it's rather safe in the area. So I do that sometimes. But then, you know, do I wake up every day and wonder, I wish I had a motorcycle? I don't care. I have my wife.
Yeah.
I'm happy. She loves me. I love her. We're together. God, you know, like, God is between us. It's awesome. So I am doing a lot of not my will a lot of time when you get married and when you have children or friends or whatever. So, like, if we want to go out in a restaurant, you know, Françoise is my wife, for those who don't know, but she will lean towards vegetables. I don't lean towards vegetables at all. So yesterday we had a grace hour lunch, you know, I joked and says, you can tell my wife is not a campus because I had sandwiches and chips, no salad.
No salad on his plate. Françoise, you didn't have salad yesterday.
One green, anything on except the pickle. But the point is, is my life ruined every time I take her out to dinner and she decides we're going to go over there, there's no burgers. Like, oh, my life is ruined. What a small life that would be. So I think, Joe, in a way, yes, it is true to say my work in God's plan is to say yes to his will. But his will is better than mine.
Yeah.
So God is not this, and we go back where I said earlier with what I read from E.J. Gaines earlier, is like, you know, when I give my life to God, am I expecting the worst because God is bad, or am I expecting the best?
Yeah.
Could it be that his will is better than mine?
Yeah.
Is your will better for your children than your children? You bet it is, because when they want to touch the oven when it's open and you slap them on the hand, don't do this, your will is better than theirs. So that's the point. Yeah. I think how much, and we go back to our theme, you know, how much of Emmanuel, God with me, do I understand? So doing God's will is not just, doing God's will is not just me relinquishing my rights.
Yeah.
Is inviting God's will in my life. And that is, that is exactly what Emmanuel with us means.
Yeah, I guess there's like this hierarchy maybe that we put, or this the value that I place on God in my life. And Ahaz is an example of how valuable God was, is, or isn't in his life, and him determining what he's going to do. And the same is true for us. Like, okay, do I value my understanding, my will, my resolution to whatever the situation is over what God's potential resolution is? Because the reality is, in this, you know, the history of this conflict that happened between Ahaz and Israel and Syria is that, you know, whatever it is, 65 years or something after he's made this alliance with Syria, he's, you know, he's protected himself, those nations that are above. And it talks about, you know, God says this, and when he's talking to Ahaz in verse 7, mm-hmm. it says, "It shall not stand, it shall not come to pass, for the head of Syria is Damascus, and within 65 years Ephraim will be shattered from being a people. The head of Ephraim is Samaria, and the head of Samaria is Ramallah." So it's like talking about this: these nations are not going to exist. I am going to be victorious mm-hmm. over mm-hmm. them. He's like pretty clear in what he's saying, and Ahaz is still saying, okay, and that did come to pass. So thinking of that, as it relates to God's will in my life, like, do I trust God in his will, that what he says he will do? Mm-hmm. Do I trust in him? And am I willing? And like you said, it depends on how important I see my will as compared to God's will, and how we are prone to saying, oh, submitting to God's will means that I have to give up something. It means I have to embrace some negative situation mm-hmm, or mm-hmm. some like circumstance that's not the best for me. You know, and we can have that type of mentality when we're saying, you know, oh, I'm going to trust God. And you say, trusting God, it means that I have to give up what I long for, what I desire, and God's not going to give me equal to what that is. Mm-hmm. But the reality is, maybe I don't know what the best thing is for me. I don't know, like, maybe I think I understand, like, what's important for me. Like Ahaz thought, it's best for me to preserve and to incorporate this, but then the implications and the things that happen as a result of that, maybe he hasn't realized that God in his omniscience and his all-knowing knew what would happen if he did that. And we can be that same way. We're like, yeah. Oh, right now this is the best decision for me, but God is thinking of the best decision for us in the long term, in the eternal viewpoint. And yes, our will is going to be subject to his will. Mm. And how much more is that relationship growing when I submit my will to his, just like in a relationship, in a marriage, like, okay, yes, you don't ride motorcycles now because your wife cares about you and loves you. And because you and care and love her, you are saying, okay, I'm not going to do that, so that our relationship is preserved. Because there are plenty of people who are in relationships or marriages or whatever it is, where they're kind of, things are held over one another. Mm-hmm. I don't do this because my wife says I can't. And it becomes like a thorn in the flesh for that relationship, where they always say that I can't do this, I can't mm-hmm. do that. And I'm always subject to them. And it's always as a sticking point, I think, in people's lives. And we can be the same in that relationship. It can be like, oh, well, you never let me do this, and this is something I really care about. And it's like, okay, well, you care about that thing more than you care about your relationship yes. with that person. Yeah. And in the same way with God, it's like, mm-hmm. God, I care about this, and I want to do this, and I could care about it more than I care about God. Mm-hmm. And I can miss him mm-hmm. in those things because I'm so concerned with these things that God has yeah. taken out of my life, and blame him and do all these different things mm-hmm. as opposed to, you know, trusting him. And having that be the focus of my life, and him being a part of it. Because I think it goes back to like God being with us, God being part of our lives, not just God being a concept that we believe yes. in. Like if he's just a concept, then him speaking, his will for my life doesn't seem like he knows me or mm-hmm. cares about me. But when Emmanuel, when God is with me, when the Spirit is, when I realize the Holy Spirit is with me, then I'm like, okay, God is part of what's going on in my life. He's not just up there telling me what I can and cannot do, mm-hmm. not with any application. You know, he can empathize with the things we're going through. And that's a beautiful thing that helps us to trust in him. And to relate to him in these decisions that we're making. Mm-hmm. And these, you know, Isaiah chapter 7 and Ahaz, it's a good example for us to see like what can happen when we value our own will or our own decision-making over God's.
Yeah, and I think it's, in the way you're describing it, almost like thinking about, you know, I'm trying to find in my mind thinking, what if I need like something, who makes a difference in my life? Well, a phone call is interesting. A text is nice, but somebody who decides to catch on a plane, or, you know, catch a plane, or or drive, and you know, and sit next to you—that's the huge difference. You know, it's yeah. That's really is huge. And I'm thinking this way. You know, that's exactly what God did for us. You know, like because people might ask the question, how do we know it's Jesus? You know, well, you know, Matthew 1:22-23. You know, when Matthew is actually explaining who Jesus is, then he says, verse 22, so all this was done that I might be fulfilled, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken by the Lord through the prophet, saying, behold, the virgin shall be with child and bear a son, and they shall call him Emmanuel, which is translated, God is with us. But his name was not Emmanuel, it was Jesus, mm-hmm. right? So you might say, well, how is he connecting Jesus with Emmanuel? Well, the point is, it was not the name per se, like you, Paul, I'm Philip. That's not the idea. It's the reality. Mm-hmm. So I think I was reading this where I'm trying to find, yes, John, we can go to John chapter 1. And also you have this idea, what we are talking about really here is the reality of incarnation.
Yeah.
You know, Christ, not just, you know, on you know, in heaven, just deciding, okay, what would be the best course of action, you know, and God being true to himself.
Yeah.
I can't just wipe out anybody's debts. I'm a righteous God, mm-hmm. you know, so it has to be paid, mm-hmm. and Christ is willing to pay it. Mm-hmm. And how much this means to me, like, do I realize what that is? Someone yeah. who is not, like, how blessed would I be if I owe $10,000 to the IRS and somebody comes along and says, here is the check. Mm-hmm. Wait, where are you coming from, you know?
Yeah.
And I, that person was, where's the catch? You know, I could mm-hmm. have all this idea. And the reality of Christ on the earth, it's the incarnation. So I want to read maybe verse 14 through 18. And the Word became flesh and dwelt among us. And we beheld his glory, the glory as of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. Jesus bore witness of him and cried out, saying, this was he of whom I said, he who comes after me is preferred before me, for he was before me. So that talks about Jesus' pre-incarnate state. Mm-hmm. You know, he's God, so he's eternal. And of his fullness we have all received, and grace for grace. For the law was given through Moses, but grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. No one has seen God at any time. The only begotten Son, who is in the bosom of the Father, he has declared him. And that's what it means. Emmanuel with us. We read that, you know, the connection in Matthew 1. Well, you know, Matthew is making the connection between Jesus and the promise of Emmanuel. Mm-hmm. And this is what it means. So the incarnation beautifully described here by John is exactly what we're talking about. You know, it's real. He came, he died, he rose again. And then when he did, he promised us that he would be with us forever. And by doing this, he sent us the Comforter, which is the Holy Spirit. Mm-hmm. Now God is with us all yes. the time.
Yeah. And that's, I mean, the law that was given through Moses and grace and truth came through Jesus Christ. Mm-hmm. And that's an amazing expression of God's care and his love, you know, knowing that this is the only way for, you know, for God's justice and his holiness to be satisfied mm-hmm. was for his son to come and for him to be, you know, become a man and die on the cross for us. And it's such a, you know, this is like a challenging thing for people in their religious and theological circles, mm-hmm. just this idea of God, Jesus, and whether or not he was God, and all these different things. We talk about it in the Bible College and Survey of Doctrine when we go over Christology and just the different things that Jesus says about himself, the things that Jesus does as he's, you know, ministering in mm-hmm. his 3 years of ministry with the miracles that he does and all those things. But like that God became a man and that God humbled himself, made himself of no reputation in, yes. Philippians. We see that like it's an expression of him, you know, making himself like us so that we can relate to him,
yes.
so that we can have a relationship with him, so that we can really be brought back to this connection that was existed when humanity was created in the garden, where there is nothing between us, where we have this relationship with him, where we're able to come to him and we're able to bring our requests to him, when we're able to interact with him and have this divine, humanity and eternity, you know, deity and humanity coming together in one person, which is what we were designed for, really, I think, as human beings, to have God with us. You know, in the Garden of Eden, God was with Adam and Eve before the fall. And one day God will be with man in eternity forever. Mm-hmm. And this is God showing us, you know, he's kind of making that happen once again through Christ, an expression of what we were meant to experience and what we were meant to have as human beings is God and man in one place together, 100%, you know, having this connection and this relationship. And I think that that's, you know, what this word, Emmanuel, is something we can really look to and we can really say, thank you, yeah. Lord, that you are with us.
Yeah.
Because in this world, you know, in the circumstances we find ourselves in, there's a lot of times where we are making decisions and are unsure what to do. Or, yes. And there are people that are, you know, have enemies and there's, you know, conflicts and there's all this stuff. And mm-hmm. what am I supposed to do? And having God as a resource, trusting him as a resource mm-hmm. and making those decisions can be, you know, take that pressure off of us and say, okay, Lord, you know, it's not my will. And Jesus even used that in, you know, the Garden of Gethsemane, not my will, but yours be done, Lord. Yes. So as we're talking about, you know, Easter is coming up this Sunday, like thinking of that, my will being subject to his will because he is with me, because he loves us, because he is the one who has paid the price and really makes it so that our lives can be about something bigger, something greater than just yes. what we know, what we can measure.
Yeah, I think it's time for us to finish. But before we do, so this is Easter week mm-hmm. coming, you know, and then we, as every year in our church, we have a play, which is like a really great production to enjoy, but also bring your friends who are not believers.
Yes.
And so we have the first one is tonight, right, 7 p.m., mm-hmm. and then Thursday night, 7 p.m., and then Friday night, 7 p.m. also, mm-hmm. and then we have a Saturday at 2 p.m.
Yes.
So if you're interested, bring along some friends, people who don't know Christ, and the message is clear, and I think it's a great time for people to realize, okay, Easter is more than just the bunny, the chocolate, mm-hmm. maybe there's something in there. Yeah. I think the way the play has been done the last 20, 30 years, it's been the same. It's like we're here to preach the gospel.
Yeah.
So again, tonight, Thursday and Friday, 7 p.m. and Saturday, 2 p.m.
Yeah. Right. Learn about what Easter, what the story of Easter, what Easter is all about.
All right.
Amen. Well, thanks.
Check
for
out.
Yeah. Thanks for joining us today. Make sure you subscribe on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, anywhere else where the show is, and follow us on YouTube. Like and subscribe. I never said that before, but...
Well,
have a great day, everybody.
It's a first for everything.